On EWTN Global Catholic Radio, you'll hear a wide variety of speakers discussing a multitude of topics, from atheism to zeal. But what are the fundamental realities that often lie hidden beneath these topics? Well, Father Thomas Dubé uncovers these very foundations on the program Bedrock Basics. Now here's Father Dubé.
Thank you for joining us this week once again. I am Father Thomas Dubé, Society of Mary, Marist, and I want today to discuss a bedrock basic that is of the shorter variety. Every one of us, surely that would be listening to EWTN, every one of us is a person who wants to do good things for other people. I'm quite sure that is true. How well we succeed, well, we do our best, but nonetheless we want to. And I imagine that many of us have the idea that to do great things for other people, you've got to have a big crowd in front of you, or you've got to get on TV, or you've got to get into a pulpit someplace and proclaim the word, all of which things are good things to do. But there's another extremely powerful one that I'm calling a bedrock basis. There are people who think that they are useless. I'm really no good for anybody. That kind of idea. Weak self-image. But whether one has a weak self-image or not, I want to make the point that there's a tremendous value in simply being a holy person. I have in my hand here a little citation from John Henry Newman, and it is typical of his, both his thought and his style. He is, by the way, recognized just about universally as one of the very best writers in the English language. Elegant. And in one of his writings, he makes this remark. It fits well what we were talking about last week, except that it's a very different angle. And I quote him, and I want to comment, and then I want to get very practical with a contemporary example of what our bedrock basic is about. Says Newman, "Truth bears witness by itself to its divine author. He who obeys God conscientiously," notice this is not somebody in a pulpit. This is anybody. Those little nitty-gritty things we talked about last time, cooking the meal, peeling the potatoes, changing the baby, smiling when somebody annoys you, all those little things. "He who obeys God conscientiously and lives holily forces all about him to believe and tremble before the unseen power of Christ. Every good and perfect gift descends from the Father of lights." So if somebody is doing what he or she ought to be doing, that person is affecting other people with the truth of Christ. It forces nobody, of course, but it nonetheless moves them. And by force here, Newman does not mean it challenges one's free will. We always remain free in this kind of thing. So, if one lives in a holy manner, people are going to tremble before the power of Christ. They may not admit it, but they are affected by it. You and I have been affected by heroically holy example. Newman goes on, "To the world indeed at large, this person does not witness. Most in the world never heard of this individual. For few can see him near enough to be moved by his manner of living." But the point is, you notice, there are those who are near enough to be moved and influenced. They are the ones we're talking about right now. "But to his neighbors he manifests the truth," capital T, that means God himself, "in proportion to their knowledge of him. And some of them, through God's blessing, catch the holy flame, cherish it, and in their turn transmit it." In other words, if you have this holy mother cooking the meal, taking care of the kids, doing what she ought to do, it won't be very many people in the neighborhood that know about this. Might be 10, it might be 5, it might be 2, it might be 20 maybe, though the word does get around also. But nonetheless, through God's blessing, some of these people catch the holy flame burning in her heart. And this goes for the husband and father in the office, if he's that kind of man. They cherish it. Some people do. And in their turn, they transmit it. And then Newman concludes in our little passage, "Thus, in a dark world, truth still makes way in spite of the darkness, passing from hand to hand." That is a bedrock basis, the power of example, holy example. One could list all kinds of saints in support of this statement and this theme for today's bedrock basic. Let me mention just four of them that I have jotted down on my little bitty outline. St. Bernard, towering talent, just a magnetic personality apparently, but the best thing about Bernard was his burning love. The best thing about anybody. When Bernard entered a very strict monastic order, the Trappists we call them today, he brought 30 men with him, and he himself, I think, was 20, just a youngster. And he brought 30 men to embrace a very difficult life. Now, I'm pretty sure that part of that was Bernard's talent. He had a remarkable mind, eloquent as they come. But the best thing, and I'm sure what influenced those men most, was this burning love for God and other people. The most touching, if I just may put in a parenthetical remark, the most touching homily I've ever heard at a funeral was at a funeral I never attended. It was a homily Bernard gave at the death of his blood brother, who had become a monk with him. I don't weep easily. I scarcely shed a tear. That's one of my defects, I'm afraid. But I almost wept as I read that homily, the love Bernard had for his blood brother. And it's that, especially his love for God and therefore others, that touched 30 men to come and embrace a very difficult life. And as far as I know, most of them stayed. The power of holy living. Obvious. St. Philip Neri was a saint that had a great sense of humor. He's known for his sense of humor, but we won't go into that. He also burned with love for God and therefore others. He worked only with men. I don't know why, that's the way the cookie crumbled, I guess, if you want to use that imagery. He worked only with men, but immensely successful with them. Immensely. He's called the Apostle of Rome. And it's the same basic kind of thing. I don't think Philip had the same natural towering talent of Bernard, though he did have plenty of talent, but that's not the main thing. It's the burning in both of their hearts. And I think of Teresa of Avila. And we've talked about her in a whole series, so I won't repeat that. But that woman was just a marvel. Both in her personality, but even more again, in her deep communion with the Lord. And she had a tremendous influence. She is still read in paperback today, several centuries later. And it's mostly her sanctity. And of course, the wisdom that God gave her. That woman just had a remarkable talent of getting things right. She didn't even seem to have to try to get them right. She just would get them right. And I'm pretty positive the main reason for that was her intimacy with the indwelling Trinity. That's where she got most of her wisdom. Although she was a highly intelligent woman, and she loved to talk with what she called learned men, theologians, scripture scholars. She loved to talk with them, and she could really hold her own with them too, even though she had no formal theological training. Just a marvel of a woman. And she had a tremendous influence on others. The same sort of thing that Newman is talking about. To those with whom she lived, and Philip Neri and Bernard, to those who are close by, some of them, through God's blessing, catch the holy flame, cherish it, and in their turn, transmit it. And Teresa's daughters today, and I think it's about 700 monasteries in the world, are still passing on the fire from Teresa because of the marvelous founder and, of course, the grace of God. In my last example among the saints, one could go on and on. If you know enough saints, you could continue with my examples of the truth passing on from very humble, inauspicious circumstances, people the world at large doesn't even know exist. And they're the ones that really hold the globe together, aside from God's goodness and grace. The curé of ours, St. John Vianney. While we've got saints who are just intellectual geniuses, Bernard was one, Augustine is another, Thomas Aquinas is another, we also have saints that didn't have very high IQs. And the curé of ours was one of them. He wasn't stupid, but he had lots of trouble getting through the course of theology in the seminary. He had lots of trouble, but he did. And he also was filled with wisdom. But the thing I want to mention about him, talk about truth passing from a hidden, holy life. The curé of ours, of course, is known as being a confessor to just thousands of people. He had no TV spots, no ads in the paper, but people would come, and you might not believe this, I don't know if I've ever mentioned it before these cameras, but people would come and have to wait 7 days in order to go to confession to this man. He was so famous. And again, no TV spots, no advertising whatsoever. And the curé of ours would hear confessions, a very taxing job, I assure you. Up to 16, 18 hours a day. He would start at 1 o'clock in the morning. Most of us priests would say that 2 hours in a row is very taxing work. It is. And here this man did it with no vacation, no days off, and I think it was at least 30 years. Well, one could go on and on. How did that man have this powerful influence? No media. His little church was a very small one, very tiny one. He didn't even have a powerful voice, so it seems. And yet these people were touched so deeply that they came from other countries of the world. They had railroad system all set up for him and plans for travels and hotels and all that sort of thing. Again, through God's blessing, to go back to Newman again, they caught the holy flame, cherished it, and in their turn transmitted it. Now, I should like to give you a contemporary example of what Newman is saying. I have in my hand here a small article. It deals with a woman who won one of the state lotteries. I won't name it. I don't want to get identifying too closely, but it was in the press. It's not secret, really. She won $11.8 million in the lottery. And, of course, the news people would come and to ask her how she's going to live after this and what she's going to do with the money and so on. And so she accommodated them. And here is what she said in answer to their questions. She said that, "I am not going to get a new car. I'm not going to take a vacation. My life is going to be no different. I've given it up to God. I live in His presence and do His will. And I did that from the start." Now, what did she do with the money? $11.8 million. She donated it, says the article, half of it, to her local parish, and the rest to a volunteer fire department and other service agencies in her hometown. In other words, she gave it all to charity. The needs of the parish, which means a lot of people, and the fire department, which means a lot of people, and other service agencies. According to this article, it seems that she kept absolutely nothing for herself. Now you might say, how did that happen anyhow? Well, let's just listen to the last part of the article, and we see where it happens. It fits everything we have been saying in this series of basic bedrock basics. "She is," said the article, "a retiree who never married." You don't have to not marry to do this, of course, but she happened to be one who gave her whole life to God aside from marriage. Maybe it was a consecrated life. I don't know. She said, and I'm quoting the article, she'll still rise at 5:30 a.m. to pray and will then drive her 1968 Chevy Malibu to Immaculate Conception Church. Let's stop there just a moment. This woman has a car that is a little over 30 years old. And she won $11.8 million, and she's not going to get a new car. Wow. So, she's going to get up at 5:30. She's going to continue to get up at 5:30, have prayer time at home. Then she's going to go to, and I take up the article, again, verbatim, to Immaculate Conception Church, where she will meditate before the Blessed Sacrament for an hour before Mass. Let's take a look at that. You know, sanctity doesn't happen out of the blue. Sanctity happens when people make up their minds they're going to give themselves entirely to God and live as the gospel indicates. All of us are supposed to live. Because if one lives the gospel, one is going to do what she does. Most people get married, and that's fine. The gospel says that's just fine. Those called to marriage, very good and beautiful vocation, especially when it's lived as it should live. This woman decided not to do that, but everything else about her is right in the gospel, which is meant for everybody. So let's notice a few things here. And the influence she, even through that decision about using the lottery money, all the influence that must have had on everybody that read the article that I'm referring to. Notice how thoroughly she lives, for example, what we've got in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 7 and 8. And this text quite clearly applies to everyone. We brought nothing into the world. That's clearly everyone. You and I, when we were born, didn't have a stitch on us. Nothing. We brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. Even billionaires who can't possibly spend even $1 billion on pleasures, even if they wanted to, they're going to take from this world not 1 cent. So this text applies to everybody. We brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But as long as we have food and clothing, let us be content with that. And that's exactly what this woman is doing. She's not going to get anything she doesn't need. No superfluities. Her heart must be completely set on God, loving Him with a whole heart, whole soul, whole mind, and all of her strength. Now, the second thing to notice about her is something we've mentioned earlier in the series. And we've had other series, as I remarked, on these subjects by themselves. Notice her prayer life. She gets up at 5:30, has prayer time, says the article, right at home. Then after that prayer time, she drives her 1968 Chevy to Mass. But before Mass, she arrives an hour early, and she spends that in meditative prayer, which in her case I would suggest is also contemplative. I'm not going to say what I don't know, but I could hardly imagine somebody living the gospel this well who wouldn't have an advanced contemplative prayer life. Anyhow, there she is at prayer. Two lengthy prayer periods before she even hears Mass, then goes home and the rest of her day. She's doing exactly what the Lord did. And let's look at that text again. Mark 1:35, exactly what He did. In the morning, long before dawn, He got up and left the house and went off to a lonely place and was absorbed in prayer. Now, this woman, of course, does not have a private mountain or a private desert or a private wilderness into which she can retreat. So what she does is she goes over to a place on earth that is made for silent prayer. That's one reason that we have churches. It's not perhaps it's not the only reason. We have churches that we can celebrate Mass in a worthy manner for large crowds and so on and worship God. But it's also a place for private prayer. Not that a person must go to church for private prayer, but this woman, just like the Lord, she gets up early, she goes to find a suitable place for prayer, and there she's absorbed in the Master, living exactly what he did. And if I may cite also in this connection what the Lord told us to do ourselves, she is doing very closely. In Matthew's Gospel, chapter 6, verse 6, I tell you solemnly, verse 5. When you pray, do not imitate the hypocrites. They have their reward. And then verse 6, when you pray, go to your private room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father in that secret place. Well, this woman has decided she will do that literally at home, and then she's going to jump into her little clunker, and she's going to go to the church where she can be alone and commune with the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament before Mass starts. She is, again, living completely what we read in the Gospel. It is not a surprise, therefore, that we find so tremendous a change, apparently, in her life. Not because she won the lottery. That was just a continuation of what had begun long before. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18. By the way, in my saying all these things about this woman, I am not trying to canonize her. That is not my affair. I don't have any authority to do that, and I'm not. I'm just saying what's in the paper, it's public knowledge, and how closely it fits the Gospel. 2 Corinthians 3:18. Speaking of the indwelling Spirit, therefore the Father and Son also indwelling, you cannot separate the persons of the Trinity, says Paul, we, with our unveiled faces, reflecting like mirrors the brightness of the Lord, are transformed from one glory to another, as we are turned into the image that we reflect. This is the work of the Lord, who is Spirit. Surely someone living as this woman does is simply showing by her decisions, most humbly, notice the press came to her, I am quite positive. She didn't call up the reporters and say, hey, I want to tell you what I won and I want to tell you what I'm going to do about it. That would be just miles from her mind. She's been transformed, as Paul says here, from one glory to another. And as we said in an early segment of this series, that this is the ultimate beauty of the human person, the supernatural beauty. Marvelous as we are in bodily being, we talked about that, in our intellects and our wills, in our going to the very edges of the universe with our telescopes, in a way encompassing the universe in our spirit knowledge of it, you see. Nonetheless, far greater is the sort of thing that we've got right here in this example of this woman. And as we have it also in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 19, which we also noted. I like to link things up in a series that we see how all of this fits together in a symphony of beauty. As von Balthasar put it, truth is symphonic. Ephesians 3:19. Until knowing the love of Christ, which is beyond all knowledge, you are filled with the utter fullness of God. This woman, in her love of God, obviously, that's clear in her prayer life, loving others tremendously, not only as much as herself, but in a way loving them more than herself, giving every bit of this $11.8 million to other people. That person indeed must be filled with the utter fullness of God. Where else could it come from? What she did with the lottery money and what she does with the rest of her life. And that brings me to a last text I want to use in this connection. It is found in Luke's Gospel, chapter 3, where John the Baptist is proclaiming the coming of the Lord. And he really lets them have it. And the people are shook up. And in verse 10, we read, "When all the people asked him, 'What must we do then?' he answered, 'If anyone has two tunics, he must share with the man who has none. The one with something to eat must do the same.'" Now, this woman has not only shared what she has with others, she gives the whole works to them. It is a remarkable example of what Newman said in his statement with which we began: "Truth bears witness by itself to its divine author. Of whom could you possibly think but God when you see this kind of living of the gospel?" Some of her neighbors must have caught this blessing, caught the holy flame, cherished it, and in their turns transmit it. And thus, in a dark world, in our world, many people would say, is a very dark world, truth still makes its way in spite of the darkness, passing from hand to hand. God bless you. See you again next week. Thank you.